Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. Progress is not always linear, and that has certainly been the case for house cats. While their popularity has wavered over the centuries, cats have been an integral part of human history for millennia.
Dr. Paul Koudinaris is, among other things, a cat historian. And in honor of International Cat Day today, Koudinaris will be giving a lecture about the history of American cats at Cafe Lulu.
He sat down with me, and he starts by explaining our cultural perceptions of cats.
We think of them only in modern terms, and we tend to overlook how nasty humanity was to them at one point in time. You know, we're all familiar that with ancient Egypt being kind of like the zenith of feline culture, but we kind of overlook the fact that for several centuries during the Middle Ages, they were persecuted and not liked, and they were burned in bonfires, and they were considered the consorts of witches and the embodiment of the devil. You know, so it's like they were domesticated. They were raised to the highest of the highs, and they were plunged down to the lowest of the lows. And then very, very slowly, by the end of the 19th century, they finally built themselves up to be companions again. Because if you went back in time to like 1850, they would have been considered, even though they were living in a city environment, they'd be considered no better than like a weasel or a raccoon. In terms of the domestication, you know, I always say that we make a big mistake when we think we domesticated animals. It's a partnership, and it always is. And anyone who doesn't believe me, go out and get yourself a bobcat and give it a try and see what happens. You know, back in the days, humans thought they were so crafty, and they came up with this thing called agriculture back in the Neolithic. And they didn't have the foresight to realize that this was heaven for rats and mice, because all this excess that could be stored was free food for them, and they had no ability to combat them. And slowly, the one specific type of cat, which was the North African wildcat, slowly those guys started to figure it out, and they look a lot like a modern tabby would. And they kind of came along and said, hey, all those mice we want to kill, they're all right here. This is let's hang out on the outskirts, you know. And then over time, you know, humanity was afraid of them at first. They didn't like them. It would be about the same as having bobcats hanging out. And over time, they realized we need these guys. And so, like I say, it was a partnership because they got something from us and we got something from them. And we probably needed them more than they needed us at first. When they would kill all those rats, eventually humanity would go out and leave them scraps of food to be like, hey, guys, don't leave. Don't leave, because we know what happens when you leave. And eventually, you know, eventually that magic moment occurred somewhere back in the Middle East where some guy stretches out his hand and some cat puts his head up and that first pet is made. But it's a partnership with them, and it always has been. And a lot of people will tell you it's like it's more than just a partnership. My cat's actually in charge.
It's funny because when you go back to, you know, you talked about the changes in how we view cats. When you go back to specifically the plague,
yeah.
In England, you know, they killed all the dogs, they killed all the cats,
yeah.
And it just caused the plague to, you know, bloom because they were no longer killing these rats.
Well, I have a statistic for you, actually, on that. That is nauseating probably for a lot of people to hear. First of all, controlling rats. And originally in Europe, it was the brown rat, which wasn't as bad as the black rat, but the black rat came back with the Crusaders. Controlling rats and considering, you know, medieval sanitation and the kind of way they were living, a lot of people were living in like what we would consider like a beaver lodge or something practically, that was heaven for rats. And it was hard enough to control them even with a healthy feline population. But once you start not only decimating them but chasing them away from your habitations, those rats are going to breed and breed and breed. Something like a pair of black rats can within 3 years breed something like a million others. And on the average in the Middle Ages, there were 10 rats per household. So humans were outnumbered by rats in their own household. And like I said, it would have been hard enough to control them even with a healthy feline population. Without that, those people were doomed. And they did get their comeuppance for that war against cats. They got their comeuppance by realizing, like I said, go back to the beginning. We needed them at the start more than they needed us, and it turned out we really did still need them at some point in time.
So when did we, specifically here in America, where for a long time cats were, again, not terribly welcome, when did we go from these are street animals, these are unwanted, to let's bring them in?
America has an interesting relationship with cats. I like to say, and this is why the talk I'm doing in Milwaukee is specifically about the history of American cats, because it's a fascinating topic, because there is no country in the world where the history of the people and the history of the cats is so closely tied, so closely unified. You know, America was founded by these outcasts who came from Europe. But they came on those boats with cats because cats were needed to kill rats and mice on those ships. We look at the Mayflower and all those ships as bringing human colonists, but we don't realize they brought feline colonists too because it was a one-way trip. So those cats also got off those boats at the same time as those people, and they founded their own feline states of America, you know? And Europe was still persecuting cats, but there was something about American ingenuity that was more about, like, we want to know what value things have, you know, more than really the spiritual detriment of having a cat around, you know. And so America was more interested in trying to find ways to put them to work. You know, there's this old theory in England that Isaac Newton invented the cat door, as if it takes, you know, a genius in astrophysics in order to figure out a cat door. It's not true. You know who invented it? American farmers. Because they didn't really want them as pets yet, but at the same time, they knew these guys can help us. So they made these little doors so the cats could go in and out. Even wild cats could go in and out and kill rats. America was the first country in the world to write cats into its national budget. In the 19th century, the Treasury Department wrote cats into the budget to protect the mail. The first budget involving cats included $1,000 for the U.S. Postal Service, $100 to New York, $10 to Philadelphia, and so on down the line, depending on the size of the post office. And it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but remember, these cats were supposed to be feeding themselves. But if the cats would kill all those mice, they'd be like, yeah, we want to feed these guys. These are government employees. The United States Army, people don't know this, we think of, you know, war dogs, right? The United States Army had hired cats long before they had hired dogs. The United States Army had hired cats in the 19th century, again, to protect the commissaries, and every commissary had cats. We did not have a dog service in the United States Army until World War I. So, the United States embraced cats more than any other country. They finally really, but they're not really pets. Like I say, they're more like service animals. It's something that comes in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. Interestingly, again, the parallel between American people and American cats, it was in the West where the cats made their name. It wasn't back in the East, because we expect, you know, American culture to flow east to west. A lot of cats had wound up going out west, and people don't realize that a lot of cowboys had cats too, and some of them would even ride with them on their saddle, you know, because they wanted to protect their rations from field mice when they would stay somewhere for the night, because, you know, this guy's going out for 3 months at a time. He can't afford to lose his rations, so he might bring a cat along with him. And think for a second about, you know, some cowboy, lonesome guy on the trail, all he's got is this cat. You know he's going to become friends with that damn animal because they're good animals and they're nice animals. And so they started becoming accepted more in the West, and then that filters back to the East. And once it starts filtering back to the East, it gets picked up by the avant-garde, you know, the independent thinkers, guys like Mark Twain. He was one of the first great Americans to love cats. The writers all started loving cats. In a way, it was a way to kind of like flaunt social mores and take the anti-pet. I'm going to take the cat instead of a dog. But they'd also found something in them, the Americans. It was the Americans who realized, I think for the first time, something the ancients realized, that a cat is an enigma. And in being an enigma, it can be a muse. And so it was the American literati and all the artists. And these articles would come out in the newspaper that said, you know, it's like, hey, if you want to be a writer, get yourself a cat. And so it was around that time. It was around the late 19th, early 20th centuries, they really start being accepted in American culture. It starts with the aesthetes. It starts with the writers and the painters, and you know how that goes. You know, it's like they're the bearers of culture. So once they start doing it, everybody else starts crashing the party.
So I know that you're researching a book really mm-hmm. about cats. What are some of the more interesting cats that you've come across as you've been doing the research, specific cats?
Yeah, there's some great ones. America, as I said, really has a great history in cats. In the 1890s, there was a cat in Chicago by the name of Toots Willard. And Toots Willard was the temperance cat. Toots Willard was the cat who saved America from public drunkenness. And Toots Willard was owned by a woman who was very big in the temperance movement. And she used to bring this cat around to temperance meetings. And Toots Willard was this enormous cat, like 30 pounds. So it was kind of like like it just worked because of its freak appeal. Like they'd sell pictures of Toots Willard. It was kind of like nowadays if they sent like a 60-pound raccoon to a grammar school to tell kids to stay off of opioids or something. It was just like it had this weird freak appeal. So Toots Willard was this really big deal, and he raised thousands and thousands of dollars for the temperance movement in America. He was like the public face of the temperance movement. Our first celebrity cat was, we think now, oh, well, it's the day of the cats because of the internet, We don't realize how big some of these animals were and how famous they were in their day because we remember human history and we don't tell it from, the animal's perspective. There was a cat by the name of Kiddo who was an airship cat who was super famous because the first dirigible aircraft to ever try to cross the Atlantic crashed. For all the humans, there was humiliation, but it wasn't the cat's fault. So kind of like to put a spin on it, they're like, hey, aviating cat, and everybody went for it. And this cat went on a national tour in 1911. This cat, Kiddo, was making $2,000 a week. In 1911, when money meant something, that's a big deal cat. $2,000 a week in 1911. So we've had our share of really fascinating cats that people have forgotten. Another of America's first famous cats was the Brooklyn Borough Cat, a cat by the name of Jerry Fox, who was famous because he wore spectacles. When his eyes started to go bad, they had fit him with a tiny little pair of glasses and somehow gave him an eye test. So we've had this wonderful history of these very colorful animals. There's something much more to a cat than sitting on a couch if you'll let it be something more.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing so much about cat history, so much that I didn't know. And thanks for joining us here in Milwaukee.
Thank you so much.
Paul Kudinaris is a cat historian who's in Milwaukee for a talk on the history of American cats. Proceeds will go to benefit the Wisconsin Humane Society. And for more information, you can go to wuwm.com.